Are you looking for Christmas cards that combine beautiful art with a clear Christian confession? Emmanuel Press offers Christ-centered, affordable cards in a variety of designs. You'll find cards with stained glass, illumination, German frescoes, and other unique artwork found only at Emmanuel Press. Visit their website, emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
Imagine an America where peace and prosperity is the norm, not the exception. Where we keep what we earn. Where our children inherit opportunity, not debt.
I really believe that this argument of voting for the lesser of two evils really undervalues the importance of a vote. I mean, we've got to be able to vote for
We're heading into a climate storm. Floods, fire, drought. How did we get here?
I like coal.
We built enough pipeline.
Those are snippets from the TV commercials featuring third-party presidential candidates. Yes, there are they. They do exist. Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, and Evan McMullen. I've even been getting emails from Evan McMullen. I don't know how Evan McMullen got my email address. And I don't think I've gotten any emails from third-party candidates. The last one I remember getting contacted, and this was before the advent of email, was good old Ross Perot. And, well, we know that he made a difference in that election. He made a big difference in that election. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Friday afternoon, November the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking about the third-party presidential candidates with Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist a little bit later, reviewing the movie Inferno. Pastor Ted Giese will talk with Pastor Chris Roseborough, our weekly feature this week in Pop American Christianity, about twisting the Bible by using wordplay, just taking words free association is what it sounds like to me. Stream of consciousness is its result. Pastor Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, will be with us. Then, since it's Friday, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We've got four soundbites to play for you. We play them 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it's your turn. You call, you email, you send us a tweet, or you go to our Facebook fan page, and you vote, and your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address, @issuesetc, and the Facebook fan page, which is already set up to take your votes for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the third-party presidential candidates, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
Great to be here with you.
Mark, first for you, why are analysts predicting record turnouts for third-party presidential candidates perhaps as great or as impactful as that of Ross Perot?
Well, when we've been doing an election analysis on the Issues Etc. for the last several weeks, we keep making this point over and over again, but the fact is it can't be said enough. These are the two most unpopular presidential candidates in modern American history. People desperately want to be told that they can vote for somebody else, and so they're casting about. And, you know, the Libertarian Party has, you know, always been around to some extent. I mean, they have good ballot access, and they have historically had good ballot access over the past couple of decades. And so they're on the ballot in a lot of states. And I think a lot of Americans like the basic sound of the Libertarian Party in terms of being, you know, fiscally conservative, socially liberal. But, you know, that can be practiced in lots of different ways. For instance, Gary Johnson is pro-choice, and a lot of libertarians are pro-life. They don't really break down evenly on that issue. So it's very hard to sort of like figure out what that means, you know, depending on who the libertarian candidate is within the conventional sort of political debates. And then this year, what's kind of interesting is in the past, for the past decade or two, we've seen this sort of like rising sort of discontent on the left, where there's like a lot of hardcore left-wing ideologues that have sort of, you know, risen up, starting with Ralph Nader in the late 90s on through the Bush years, where they got really enervated by the anti-war movement. And this year, with the revelations that the Democratic National Committee was working behind the scenes to basically hamstring Bernie Sanders' campaign, these hardcore, you know, left-wing activists are a lot of them are very hopping mad and are refusing to vote for Clinton. I'm not in any really huge significant numbers, but, you know, even a point or two in a very close election of people voting for the Green Party candidate Jill Stein could make a difference.
Molly, what are your thoughts on the at least the predicted popularity of the third parties this time?
I actually think a big story is that third parties aren't bigger this year for the same reason that Mark just cited. We have these are the two least liked candidates in history. This should have been a good year for a good third party run. The Libertarian Party should take the Libertarian Party. They actually did something wise, which is they put forth a ticket with two governors who had a very good track record in the states that they were in, particularly the top of the ticket, Gary Johnson, and with a message that should be appealing to a lot of people, support for constitutional governance and limited government, and that has not been the campaign that Gary Johnson or William Weld have run. Or you have this major discontent on the right with the unacceptability of the Republican Party candidate, but nobody ever really coalesced around someone else to be a good option. And so, you know, that you have like a smattering of options that you can pick from on the right, but nobody really rose to prominence there. So I think this could have been a massive year for a third party, but due to a bunch of complicated circumstances, it didn't really become so.
Well, there's a lot of speculation about, you know, trying to get somebody to run third party earlier in the year. And my boss, the Weekly Standard, Bill Kristol, was heavily involved in efforts to recruit somebody. And for whatever reason, people just didn't coalesce around an alternative. But looking at the state of the race right now and how broadly unpopular both candidates are, I mean, if Mitt Romney or somebody had gone in third party earlier in the year, there's a very good chance he might actually be winning right now. At the time, you know, nobody wanted to play a spoiler, but like, you know, even now, Evan McMullen, there have been polls in the last month that show that he might actually win Utah. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but he's probably going to get over 20% of the vote in Utah, which would be, you know, unprecedented for anybody since, you know, at least Ross Perot. You know, Molly's right. I mean, there was a real opportunity for a third-party candidate, just that no one stepped up, and the people that did step up have been completely underwhelming as candidates.
Molly, I'm wondering if there was a moderate, credible, experienced third-party candidate, could he or she not just spoil, but win this race?
I mean, again, I would say in American history, that's a very difficult, or in modern American history, that's a very difficult thing to pull off. This year, I think it could have happened. It would have required, again, people to be on the same page regarding a candidate and what people were going for. It might be a bit of a pipe dream, but I think that there are people on left and right who are fed up with a lot of what's happening with typical politicians, who seek a return to civility and a return to constitutional governance, where we might have differences of opinion, but we agree on how to get that done. That's obviously much more prevalent on the right than on the left, but there is some room for building a new coalition that way. And it would have been interesting to see what would have happened. You could also argue, though, that there's too much risk involved with such a third party run, that it's difficult, that people are so partisan, political and ideological, that it's difficult to break out of that, and that people would have so wanted to avoid the risk of losing due to an untested theory, that they would have rallied more quickly to their respective corners of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Molly, is Gary Johnson a true libertarian?
So this is something that has been very frustrating for people who are libertarian. Libertarians generally believe in a limited government. They believe that people should have the right, that people do have the right to do what they want with their lives, so long as they're not hurting other people. There can be differences in how that principle is applied, but generally speaking, a belief in limited government. I think it's false to describe it as conservative economically and liberal socially, so much as it's an approach to how much the government should be involved in the lives of people. And Gary Johnson is, frankly, a terrible libertarian. And what's weird is he was a good libertarian when he was running New Mexico as the Republican governor, and he showed how his principles come into play. He did not believe that everything was the job of the government, and he was happy to veto bills that overreached and whatnot. As presidential candidate, he's been bad on a lot of issues, most notably religious liberty. He has said things that are very questionable about the role of government in forcing people to provide services or goods that are against their conscience. And that's kind of the lowest level of being a libertarian, is that you don't believe people should do things against their conscience, particularly if they're not hurting anyone else. He and his running mate have had scary things that they've said about who they would pick for Supreme Court justices, their views on the Second Amendment, and also Gary Johnson's views on foreign policy are almost a caricature of libertarian foreign policy. Again, there's no one libertarian foreign policy, but in general, it's a belief that the United States should be more restrained in what it's involved with overseas and what conflicts it gets involved in. Its critics always say that libertarians are uninformed and naive. Well, Gary Johnson was asked by, I think it was Chris Matthews, some questions about someone asked him about Aleppo, the city in Syria where so much conflict is seen, and he said, "What is Aleppo? What is Aleppo?" And he had no idea what the situation was or what to say about it. He also had trouble answering a question about foreign leaders, and so he's just not been a great representative. I think this, again, could have been a year where the Libertarian Party really took things to a new level, and they were doing things smartly, in part by picking a high-profile candidate with a lot of experience. But this has not gone well for them. Well, we'll have to see how things turn out, but I could see them polling or getting the actual numbers in the same vicinity of 4 years ago.
Well, Mark, do you think a true libertarian could have had a chance in this race?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, again, people were looking for another candidate to turn to, especially on the right. And libertarians have always sort of been loosely affiliated with the right. You know, they were, in ideological terms, known as the fusionist movement, where, you know, social conservatives and libertarians would get together under the shared interests and work together politically. Now, obviously, the Libertarian Party was, you know, sort of outside the sort of mainstream conservative movement to some degree, but, you know, historically, a lot of people that have worked with the Libertarian Party have done so to push an ideological message, and then when that fails at the ballot box, they hold their nose and they vote Republican. Gary Johnson did something very early on in this campaign where he decided he wanted to make sort of a conscious break with the conservative establishment. He made this calculation somehow that all of the energy and all the votes for him to pick up were from disaffected Sanders supporters, particularly among young people. And they campaigned like it. Gary Johnson had this statement where he would go out on campaign rallies and this thing where he routinely saying his stump speech about how he agreed with Bernie Sanders 75% of the time or whatever it was. And that's an astounding thing for a libertarian to say. I mean, if somebody who believes ostensibly in limited government, to say you believe, you know, you agree with a socialist 75% of the time, I don't know what he was thinking, but I think it turned off a lot of conservatives that maybe even had good feelings about libertarians on some level. So, yeah, it was just a real disaster, and I think it was, you know, a real opportunity, particularly because the Libertarian Party had previously run a lot of sort of kooky candidates. And Gary Johnson, again, was a former governor of a state who went one with a good track record and who was popular when he was in office. So, you know, certainly they'd had an opportunity to do something there. But it has a lot to do with things that have gone on with Gary Johnson personally. I interviewed him 12 years ago when he was running for president then. And I don't know what's happened. He just seemed much sharper. And there's been a lot of speculation about his, you know, fondness for medical marijuana because he's in the marijuana business. This may be affecting his performance. So I don't know what to say. But, yeah, he was kind of an embarrassment on the campaign trail.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. On the other side of the break, we're going to be getting a quick overview of the positions of Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, and Evan McMullen. Stay tuned.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November the 1st through the 8th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's fall warehouse sale at cph.org and at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November the 1st through the 8th.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
When you say, "I am baptized," you are in fact saying, "Jesus died for me."
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Now that work of Christ for you is given to you in baptism.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Representative pastors who are fans of the world champion Chicago Cubs love Issues Etc.
The liturgical movement is about the piety of God's people. It is about where we encounter God, where we meet Him in His Son, Jesus Christ, where His gifts are bestowed upon us, where all of these things come together.
The Catholics, on the one hand, adopted some Lutheran or Reformation language about grace, but they had a warning for Roman Catholics. The way that we talk about it here isn't for you, it's for the Protestants.
When you hear one of our opposing attorneys saying that you can't characterize any part of the human body as male or female, that's not law, that's not reason, that's not logic.
In the next hour of Issues Etc., we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You will hear those soundbites in their entirety, and then your opportunity to vote by giving us a call, sending us an email, a tweet, or going to our Facebook fan page, and your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. In the meantime, we're talking third-party presidential candidates with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of the Federalist. Molly, let's go down in domestic issues, foreign issues, and social issues, where each one of these third-party candidates stands, beginning with Gary Johnson.
Yeah, Gary Johnson has his policies available to read on his website, and they're actually pretty standard when you read them, and it's more in his interviews that he might go a little bit rogue. But like most libertarians, he believes in a restrained government when it comes to domestic issues. He would like to see taxes simplified and lowered. He was governor of a border state, so he has sort of appropriately complex views on immigration, understanding that it's not so simple as a lot of people like to make it out to be, but he does think that there should be a sensible immigration policy, a coherent one, that is less reliant also on a welfare state where people come from other countries and take advantage of a welfare state. He, in general, would like to see incentivized policy where people make good decisions through good incentives. He does support religious freedom. He says he supports religious freedom. On the particulars, it's somewhat shady there. On foreign policy, he's definitely for a restrained intervention in other countries. He is opposed to most of the conflicts that we have found ourselves embroiled in recent years and thinks that the foreign policy should be focused more on what's in the best interest of the United States in terms of how much we want to get involved. We should be very skeptical about being willing to lose treasure and people to conflicts that are not necessarily the conflicts that are in the best interest of the country. He actually has a lot of support among military people, too. Gannett's, or the Army Times does a poll of military members, and they showed that I think he had more support than Hillary Clinton did. Still below Donald Trump, I believe, but you know, most people do not in the military do not like a lot of military adventurism. And he also on social issues, he is totally pro-abortion. Thinks that people should have the right to decide when and how and where they end the lives of their unborn children. He supports same-sex marriage and the redefinition of marriage, very supportive of the Obergefell ruling and does not seem concerned about the religious liberty implications of that ruling. And but things that people might appreciate on education policy in terms of supporting more choice for parents in how they educate their children.
Okay, Mark, let's talk about Jill Stein on domestic, foreign, and social issues.
Well, I don't really know where to begin. A good way of describing Jill Stein would be she's Bernie Sanders without the air of respectability. she's never, like, really held public office. She's basically a radical left-wing activist. I mean, she's a physician. So, you know, in theory, she has some, you know, degree of knowledge about how the world works. Yet at the same time, she's said all sorts of skeptical things about vaccines causing autism and other things that would cause you to raise eyebrows. She's currently campaigning right now. There's a warrant out for her arrest in North Dakota because she showed up at the protests over the pipeline that they're building there that the Standing Rock Sioux tribe is trying to hold up. And while she was there, she didn't just participate in the protest. She trespassed and defaced private property and all this other stuff as part of the protest. So, yes, she is campaigning for president right now with a warrant out for her arrest.
Really distinguish her from the other major party candidates.
Fair
good
enough.
Point. Good point.
She, you know, obviously is all pro, all in on socialized medicine, and you know, in terms of you know where Gary Johnson might be prudently worried about military adventurism, I'm pretty sure that, you know, if the Chinese military, you know, landed in Venice Beach, I'm not sure Jill Stein would be terribly concerned about this. I don't mean to be, you know, flippant or derogatory necessarily, but just one does not get the sense that she has a very serious platform, and in fact it's so far left wing that I think a lot of, you know, sort of mainstream Democrats who would consider voting for Sanders probably would write her off. And in particular, I don't remember the particulars involving her vice presidential candidate, a man named Baraka, as his last name, I forget his first name. He's might be even, you know, have a more sort of eyebrow-raising history of left-wing activism than she does. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are going to vote for her just strictly to protest vote because they're so angry about what the Democratic National Committee did when they were supposed to be ostensibly neutral to hamstring Bernie Sanders' campaign. But other than a protest vote, I don't think a very significant percentage of the American populace is so far left wing that they feel good affirmatively voting for Stein.
Molly, Evan McMullen on domestic, foreign, and social issues.
Yeah, Evan McMullen would be a much more standard Republican candidate in a year where the Republican nominee is not so standard. He is generally supportive of understanding that American involvement in conflict overseas advances American interests. He says he was opposed to the invasion of Iraq, although there's no evidence that he was opposed to it at the time. He was working at the CIA for many years, and so he's very supportive of intelligence work as a means of dealing with problems throughout the world. He cares about financial responsibility and keeping He would just basically be as standard Republican as you can. I believe he's pro-life, but supportive of the Obergefell decision. I was trying to read a little bit about what he believed on the Obergefell decision that redefined marriage away from an institution that recognizes marriage as based on sexual complementarity into something else. He does not seem to be worried about the threat that that decision poses to religious liberty or to the institution of marriage, but otherwise is pretty standard in his Republican approach and would adopt the vast majority of the Republican platform.
A question for both of you. Had Bernie Sanders decided to go third party, Would Donald Trump right now be on his way to the White House? Molly first.
I hadn't really thought of it. I think that what's really interesting is how strong Bernie Sanders was in the Democratic primary at the and how much he overcame. When, now that we know through WikiLeaks how much sabotage there was of his candidacy, you realize that there was a lot of support for him in his party. And he shaped a lot of what the two major candidates say. I mean, Hillary Clinton had to pull pretty far left to keep him at bay. And Donald Trump has also said that he agrees with a lot of what Bernie Sanders had to say. And there's not, you know, there's a thing to be said for that, in that Bernie Sanders recognized that there are, that there's a lot of corruption in Washington, D.C., a lot of cronyism, problems with how much capitalists are the beneficiaries of government policy. This is actually a lot to do with what Donald Trump is saying, too. So if he'd been the nominee or if he'd been third party, I do think that would have changed the race. And I think that you would be seeing that really cut into Hillary Clinton. You might have even seen him get some support from some more mainstream Democrats. It's been surprising how little negativity you've seen from Democrats about Hillary Clinton, even as she is embroiled in multiple investigations by the FBI and just coming into the final days of the campaign under a cloud of corruption and suspicion and whatnot. So I think it would have had a really dramatic change on the race. But the Democrats are pretty good at getting unified behind one person, so it's hard to say.
What do you think, Mark? Could Bernie Sanders have been the Ross Perot of 2016?
Well, I don't know if he would have been the Ross Perot. I mean, people forget that Ross Perot polled I think he topped out at 19% of the vote when all was said and done. And in fact, he led that race for a significant portion. I mean, if he hadn't done that crazy thing where he got all paranoid and he dropped out of the race and came back in, he might well have won, a three-way race. I don't know if Bernie Sanders would have quite gotten to that level, but bear in mind, you know, if he were just, you know, running to the far left right now and he was getting, you know, 3 to 4 times whatever the support Jill Stein is getting, he absolutely would still very likely be a spoiler in this race. Yes, I think, you know, particularly in light of the email stuff that's going on, there is a non-trivial percentage of the Democratic base that they may feel like they have to vote for Hillary Clinton because of the alternative, but they are not happy with the choice. And they would be looking for some sort of alternative that they felt that they could, you know, give voice to their concerns. And Bernie Sanders could certainly be that guy, and particularly because he was very popular among the youth and under 30 crowd. And these are people that I don't think have quite the party allegiance of older voters and would feel, you know, much more likely to take a flyer and just vote for somebody that maybe didn't have as big a chance of winning.
In the end, Molly, with about 30 seconds, will Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, or Evan McMullen make a difference in the presidential outcome?
I think they will, and also in addition to them, you're going to see more people voting in random people all across the spectrum. I've talked to a lot of friends who just can't bring themselves to vote for either of the major party candidates, but they're also not terribly enthused by the third party candidates. I think you'll see a lot of, not in any super significant way, but you're going to see more of that just random writing in here in this election than you've seen in previous years. And I think Utah is actually the state where you might see it play out the most, or other Western states. Like Colorado really does have a culture that embraces third-party voting, and you're seeing a lot higher support there for Gary Johnson and Jill Stein than in other states. That could affect who wins the state. I mean, Hillary Clinton should be winning it, but because of the work on the third parties there, it's not totally certain. I don't think that Evan McMullen will win Utah, but he has certainly made that state interesting, and he has made people realize that you can't take Utah for granted and put just any Republican nominee up and be counting on the state to go for that nominee. So it still is important. And people have different ideas about how to vote, including that, you know, you should just vote your conscience no matter who that person that you're voting for is. So it'll be, we'll just have to wait and see.
Monday on Issues Etc., we're going to dedicate an entire hour to open lines. Who are you voting for president and why? You can follow Mark Hemingway on Twitter at Heminator, that's Heminator, and Molly at MZ Hemingway. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Molly is senior editor for the Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to be reviewing the movie Inferno. It has Tom Hanks. That's something going for it. Has director Ron Howard. That's another big thing going for it. But is it more than just kind of fearful fluff and puff? Pastor Ted Gacy will be our guest as we review the movie Inferno, another Dan Brown saga. Then Pastor Chris Rosebro will join us for This Week in Pop American Christianity. Today we'll be talking about the Bible and twisting the Bible by using wordplay. Then it's Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll be taking your votes for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. And by phone in just about an hour, 1-877-623-MYIE. Stay tuned. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. AdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at AdGruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Does the gospel free you to do what you want? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer's spiritual journey from Roman Catholicism and American Evangelicalism to Confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.